Thank you for your regular and generous support of Issues Etc. in the past year, 2008. A good summary of my hopes for Issues Etc. for 2009 are St. Paul's words to the Colossians. Pray for us, too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Thank you again for your support of Issues Etc. We'll continue defending the faith, teaching the truth, and making the most of every opportunity to proclaim Christ and Him crucified.
Rick Warren has been invited to speak. Dr. Joseph Lowery, who has deeply contrasting views to Rick Warren on a whole host of issues, is also speaking.
We are challenging the inaugural committee's right to invite Christian ministers in. That is un-American. It makes those of us good Americans who don't believe in God second-class citizens. It's unfair.
But of course, we'd be delighted to find just the right pew for the Obama family, should they ever like to worship here.
Well, just because it seems natural doesn't mean it's best for you or society. I'm naturally inclined to have sex with every beautiful woman I see, but that doesn't mean it's the right thing to do.
I've come to this conclusion, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but that the full understanding of Christianity is going to take a full lifetime of study.
Okay, admit it, you're pro-life, and every once in a while you might venture at a party, maybe over the holidays, with some relatives who you know are not like-minded on the issue of abortion or euthanasia or other life issues, embryonic stem cell research, whatever the issue may be. You've been brave enough at some moment to jump into the conversation and try and defend the pro-life position and defend the unborn. But before you know it, not 5 minutes have gone by in the conversation, and you're sidetracked into some sort of other issue. You're talking about exceptions, rape, incest. You're talking about all sorts of other issues that may have at one point been related to the defense of the unborn, but you're sidetracked and you're lost and you're without arguments. How do you avoid that? We're going to begin a five-part weekly series with Scott Klusendorf, president of the Life Training Institute, on five bad ways to argue about abortion. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Scott Klusendorf, we'll spend the rest of today's program talking about educating children in the inner city. Paul Miller, principal of Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, will be our guest. We are coming to you live this Wednesday. It's the 7th of January. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest and president of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back.
Happy New Year, Todd.
And to you as well. How do you avoid it? I mean, dinner party or dinner with the relatives, and you jump in ready to defend the pro-life position, and before you know it, you've been sidetracked into a side issue. How do you avoid it, Scott?
Well, you can't avoid it because it's bound to happen. It happens in nearly every conversation that I'm in, but you can manage it. And the way you manage it is to return the issue to the question, what is the unborn? I do that by using what I call the I agree tactic. So, for example, I'm having a conversation with someone about the issue of abortion, and they say to me, well, every woman should have a right to choose. I say, I agree with you completely. You are absolutely right if what? If the unborn are not human beings. If abortion, morally speaking, is nothing more than having your tooth pulled, then look, I agree with you. Have as many abortions as you want. But if it takes the life of a defenseless human being without justification, well, that's another matter altogether, isn't it? So I keep coming back to this question, what is the unborn, and telling the person that I agree completely with what they're saying if the unborn aren't human. Now, that's not going to work in every situation because, for example, there are some people who will look you in the eye and say, I'll concede the unborn are human and I'll kill them anyway because of my right to bodily autonomy. Obviously, the I agree tactic I just mentioned isn't going to work in that situation. But, Todd, for the majority of people we meet at dinner parties, at school, even in our churches, they simply assume the unborn aren't human. they don't argue for it. And that's why I keep bringing it back to the question, what is the unborn?
Okay, so with that little kind of, it's going to happen, as you said, with that little word of warning in mind, let's deal with one of the first ways that you say we should not, or one of the traps we shouldn't fall into when arguing about abortion. You say a big mistake, perhaps the first, is to confuse objective claims with subjective ones. What are you talking about?
Well, you're exactly right, Todd. Objective truth claims are propositions that correspond to reality. And they're true whether I recognize them as such or not. They transcend human subjects, is the point I'm making. I don't create them through language. I discover them through the proper use of my mental faculties. Let me give you an example. The claim the Dodgers won the World Series in 1988 is objectively true. Now, I might add, as a Dodger fan, it's regrettable that was the last time they won it. But 1988 was the year the Dodgers won the series. Notice that my accepting it as true did not make it true. It was true already, and my job was to get in line with reality. Conversely, when we talk about subjective claims, we're talking about something that's personal in nature, preferences, if you will. And these claims apply to the individual subject but may not apply to someone else. For example, suppose I said to you, Todd, that chocolate ice cream is better than vanilla. You might well reply, well, that's true for you, but I happen to like vanilla. In this particular case, I'm really telling you what I prefer, not what's right or wrong, true or false. The problem is that many people today confuse claims that are subjective in nature with objective truth claims. And when it comes to the morality of abortion, this is absolutely rampant. I'll give you an example. Maybe you've seen this. There's a popular bumper sticker that's out there that says, don't like abortion? Then don't have one. Notice what's going on here. The pro-life advocate makes a moral claim that he believes is objectively true, namely that elective abortion unjustly takes the life of a defenseless human being. The abortion choice advocate replies by saying, aha, well, if you don't like abortion, well, then you don't have to have one. Notice that the claim of the pro-lifer was subtly changed from an objective claim about truth and reality to a preference claim about what we like.
And yet we are, with all of that said, it seems almost insurmountable that when terms like moral or morality are raised today, it is almost universally assumed that we are talking about mere preferences or opinions.
That's true, and that's where we have to make examples concrete. For example, imagine if I said to you, don't like slavery, well then don't own a slave. You and everybody else listening to me right now would think I was nuts. And you would rightly reply that I did not truly grasp why people believe slavery is wrong. Slavery isn't wrong because I happen not to like it. It's wrong because the slaves in question are intrinsically valuable human beings who are not by nature property of another human being. Whether I happen to like slavery or not is not relevant to the question of whether slavery is in principle wrong. I mean, here's another example. Imagine if I said, don't like spousal abuse, then don't beat your wife. Again, the wrongness of spousal abuse does not depend on my preferences or taste. It's entirely possible that someone might like spousal abuse, but still say it's wrong to do it. Now, I don't want to be friends with that kind of person, but you get the idea. My saying it's right or wrong is not what's making it right or wrong. We have to look beyond that to objective principles.
Quite recently, President-elect Barack Obama, in discussing abortion, said, well, you know, this is a deep moral issue. And I thought that's a great way to begin because it is a moral issue. It is essentially a moral issue. And yet he went on to say that because it's a moral issue, no one can really decide except each individual whether or not they should do it or not. Is that the kind of relativism you're talking about here?
Yeah, and he showed with that statement that he did not understand the nature of moral reasoning. He was doing exactly what we've been talking about, confusing subjective claims and objective claims. He's not getting the message that when pro-lifers say abortion is wrong, we're not talking about what we prefer. It's not an individual opinion. We're claiming to be right. Now, Todd, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're factually wrong about the unborn being human, and maybe we're philosophically wrong in saying that human beings should be treated a certain way because of the kind of thing they are by nature. But it's not fair, nor is it in any way legitimate from a logical point of view, to simply change the kind of claim the pro-lifer is making into one that we happen to like better. And that's what President-elect Obama was doing.
Okay, sometimes the reaction is a little more visceral, but I imagine it's rooted in the same kind of thinking. You're just trying to impose or force your morality on me. About a minute before we take a break.
Whenever I hear that, I have two words that come right out of my, or three words, or however many it is, that come right out of my mouth. What's wrong with that? When they say, you shouldn't force your views on me, I say, well, what's wrong with that? Immediately, it will become clear that they are forcing their view on me, because any answer they give me to that question, what's wrong with that, will be an example of them imposing their particular moral view on me. Todd, everybody in this game has a position and needs to argue for it, but it's simply disingenuous for one side to pretend that they occupy a neutral moral ground from which they are above casting judgments. No, they're casting judgments just as much as we are. Let's duke it out and find out whose judgments and whose positions make more rational sense.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. We're beginning a five-part weekly series with him today, Five Bad Ways to Argue About Abortion. We're talking about confusing subjective claims with objective truth claims. It's Wednesday, January the 7th. He's president of Life Training Institute. He's going to be leading a workshop, Making Abortion Unthinkable, January 31st at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Now, you'll find a link to Life Training Institute under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. So, what kind of arguments have you heard in favor of abortion or embryonic stem cell research? Give us a call or email us during this break. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE.
Did they tear it out with talons of steel and give you a shot so that you wouldn't feel, and washed it away as if it wasn't real?
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Assessing the new Congress.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
There will be fewer pro-life voices in the new Congress, but there are some hopeful signs. For starters, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, a pro-life champion and mother of five, retained her seat despite being targeted by pro-abortion forces. In addition, candidates backed by the Susan B. Anthony List won 56% of their elections against candidates financed by the pro-abortion group Emily's List. In what was a very tough election year, we should remain encouraged. The pro-life movement will retrench, reorganize, and re-energize.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Well, Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. We're talking about one of the bad ways to argue about abortion, confusing subjective claims with objective truth claims. Joe is calling from his car. Joe, thanks for waiting and welcome.
Hi, Todd. How about responding to the suffering argument, meaning if the woman has the baby, she'll suffer because she's too poor, or she'll be poorer, or the baby would suffer because it would be an unwanted child. And that ties in with the embryonic stem cell research, that there should be no human suffering with diseases. And if it means doing embryonic stem cell research to end that, then we have a moral obligation to do that. Thanks.
Joe, thank you very much. You kind of postulated the utilitarian. Sounds very beneficent. Let's end all suffering, even if it means abortion.
Well, it sounds great as long as you assume that the unborn are not human beings. Let's turn it around on the critic who raised the question that Joe referenced. Suppose that we said to that critic, look, I agree with you. We should be able to end the lives of the unborn to relieve suffering if what? If the unborn aren't human. Imagine, for example, if I had a toddler in front of me. And I said, look, the family can't afford to feed this kid anymore, and they'd like to execute the child to help the checkbook balance at the end of the month. Anyone with a functioning brain who has even an inkling of moral sensibility about them would say you can't kill the toddler just to make a difficult life problem go away. Well, if the unborn are human, like that toddler, we shouldn't be killing them in the name of making problems go away any more than we'd kill a toddler for that reason. When it comes to embryonic stem cell research, let me put it this way. Let's say that I have a good eye and you, Todd, have a bad eye. Should you be allowed to kill me and take my good eye to make your bad eye feel better? I think most reasonable people, hopefully, would say, no, you can't do that. You can't kill one human being to make another human being feel well. If the unborn are human, if they're human beings, the embryos in question, for example, when we talk about embryonic stem cell research, if they're human beings, they should not be killed to benefit other human beings. So it all comes back again to this question, what is the unborn? On just a procedural note here, there's new evidence out today that scientists have not come anywhere close to overcoming the hurdles with embryonic stem cell research, the most notable one being the tumor formation problem. So even on a practical level, we are not anywhere close at this point to actually seeing embryonic cells introduced into clinical trials in human beings.
Back to something you were saying before the break. You were talking about the alleged moral neutrality of the pro-choice claims. They claim kind of this triangulated position, morally neutral in the things. Yeah, they're above it all. You say this is self-refuting. How so?
Well, as soon as they say that we shouldn't make a judgment that's moral in nature, what have they just done? They've made a moral judgment. So their claim ends up committing suicide. It can't live with its own rules. It's like somebody saying my brother is an only child, or I can't speak a word in English, or the Cardinals are going to win the World Series next year. You know, something that can't possibly be true. I just alienated all your audience, but you get the drift. You can't make that kind of claim without defeating it in the process.
All right. Is it possible for someone who takes the position of moral relativity, that is, I have my morality, you have your morality, nothing's really absolute, but we each kind of carry it around as like a briefcase or something, and mine's mine, yours is yours, and never the twain shall meet. Can they really ever say that anything in the realm of human activity is absolutely wrong?
I don't see how they can, because if morals are a function of my society, and my society determines what's right and wrong, then no other society can criticize it. And oh, by the way, moral reformers who challenge a society like Martin Luther King or Gandhi, by definition, are evil because they're going against the society's moral code. If morals are not driven by society but are driven by the individual, then whatever the individual thinks is what's right, and there can be no criticism of his actions. For example, we really can't say that Adolf Hitler was any worse or any better than any of the rest of us. Mother Teresa, Adolf Hitler, hey, they just had different preferences. One liked to kill people, the other liked to help them. Who are we to judge?
Can people consistently live in a morally relativistic framework, believing in moral relativism?
I don't think so, Todd. And C.S. Lewis pointed this out. He said, look, a man who claims there is no right and wrong is going to complain if you steal his orange or cut in line. And that's because we all start making judgments about what's fair and what's right, even when we claim we don't. It's inbred in our natures. We're moral people by nature. In the 1960s, you had liberals marching in the street proclaiming that morality was individual, and who were we to impose our moral truths on others? And the very next day, they're marching, screaming that Richard Nixon and his actions in the Vietnam War represented pure, unadulterated evil. Well, you can't have it both ways. Either Nixon was evil, or he was just using his own sense of morality. And if that's true, who are we to judge?
I want to come back to something that I observed earlier in our conversation, right after you answered that first question. Our society is immersed and perhaps now drowned in this moral relativism. It appears that many, especially among our leaders, have lost the capacity to think critically when it comes to moral issues. Is there any way, given this tide of relativism, for the pro-lifer to still make sound and convincing moral arguments?
Yes, I do believe we can do that, Todd, and I see it happen everywhere I go, and I know other pro-lifers who are engaged in pro-life apologetics are seeing progress. We have to challenge this relativism because in most people, it's a default position. It's not one they've thoughtfully considered. Now, there are exceptions. There might be some academic folks somewhere who have really thought this through. At least they think they have, and they are committed to it for intellectual reasons. But for most people, they simply accept what the culture is espousing. And as soon as you push one of their hot buttons, they stop being moral relativists. I remember at UCLA one time I was with a group called Justice for All, helping them with a campus display that they take all over the country. And it contains huge, professionally airbrushed depictions of abortion. And we put up warning signs so that people that don't want to see these pictures won't have to. But, of course, it draws a crowd. It's the talk of the campus. And a guy came up to me, and he had 30 young women around him. And he came up to me and said, well, I think every woman should have a right to choose. You can't tell me morality is morality is objective. It's totally up to me to decide. I said, tell me this. Is it wrong to rape women for fun? He said, well, it might be for you, but that doesn't mean it's wrong for other people. And I said, so you're telling me that raping women for fun is a personal preference? He said, yes. And then I just stepped back and watched all the women around him just devour him. You see, at that point, I had illustrated that his position was simply ridiculous. And I did it by pushing a hot button. The hot button I pushed in that case was making the point that if you truly believe morals are relative to individuals, it's really hard to argue how rape can be wrong. And the women that were observing this conversation caught that immediately. And boy, did they have some things to say to that young guy.
Smart guy. Not him, but you. One last question then with only a minute. Another default position. Look, I'm personally opposed to abortion. I think it's wrong. Would never have one myself. But I just cannot see why we should make it illegal. One minute.
Yeah, exactly. And the question to ask in that point is, why are you personally opposed? I mean, if abortion is not the killing of an innocent human being, why be opposed at all? But if it does take the life of a human being without justification, how can you say that we should have a right to do what is wrong? Again, imagine if I said to you, I personally oppose beating my wife, but if you want to rough your wife up, hey, that's your business. I think any civil person with a sense of moral reasoning would say, no, you can't say that. And it would show that I truly did not understand the nature of moral reasoning. Wife beating is wrong because it violates the rights of another human being who by nature should not be treated as property. where if I say I like chocolate ice cream, but I don't like vanilla, so don't impose vanilla on me, I'm not talking about an objective moral position. I'm talking about a matter of personal taste. And it's very important, Todd, that we draw that distinction for people, that they understand morality is not about taste. It's about what's objectively right and wrong, regardless of our taste.
Next Wednesday, we're going to be talking with you again, this time about the mistake of the ad hominem argument. What will we be discussing? Just a few seconds here.
This is where people attack you personally by calling into question your actions or behavior instead of dealing with the substance of your argument.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He'll be leading a workshop titled Making Abortion Unthinkable, January 31st at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He'll join us a week from today to continue our five-part weekly series on five bad ways to argue about abortion. And we'll post information on this workshop at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page. Scott, thanks for being our guest.
You are welcome, Todd. See you next week.
It's easy to get sucked into this thing, isn't it? Very easy to slide down the slippery slope into the trap of moral relativism because it's everywhere around us. It is almost the atmosphere that we breathe. But it's irrational, and no one can live that way, and no one does live that way. We are by nature moral beings. Now, our morality might be completely off-center. It might be a completely misdirected compass, but we are moral beings. And we find in true reasonable thinking about abortion a moral evil, intrinsically moral evil. When we come back, we'll talk about educating kids in the inner city.
LCMS Inc. canceled this. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Teen vandalism. What's wrong with this generation?
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the speakers at next month's Answers for Darwin National Conferences.
As we know, teen vandalism is a huge growing problem. My former neighbor once told me, remember all those kids in the neighborhood? Well, they become teenagers and they're roaming the streets with no respect for property. I'm really worried about the next generation. A verse in the book of Judges came to mind. There arose another generation after them which knew not the Lord nor yet the works which he had done. I think the real problem is that young people have grown up in public schools that basically threw out Christianity and the Bible. They've been taught to believe in man's opinions about our supposed evolutionary history over millions of years rather than what Scripture teaches. And what's worse, many Christians have compromised on the history of the Bible as well. You know, if the church wants to make a difference with this generation, the key is for pastors to preach the foundational truths in the book of Genesis, that there is a creator who set the rules for our behavior. That should be their challenge for young people.
Can the book of Genesis shed any light whatsoever on climate change and global warming? It's a controversial topic, of course, but we treat it with balance in our new handbook. It's yours for a gift of any amount today. Call toll-free at 888-89-ANSWERS and request our Global Warming Handbook. That's 888-89-ANSWERS or visit our attractive website, answersoffer.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, my people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.